This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 378, brought to you by C2E2 and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 378. I am Josh Flanagan, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And he has returned, and he doesn't want to talk about it. Connor Kilpatrick.
The Gators didn't get me.
They will. They always will.
I almost did get lost in Florida, though. It's one of those modern problems where your GPS is on your phone, and the phone was rapidly running out of battery, and I would have been lost in the middle of Florida, not knowing where I was or where to go. But I'm back.
It's so humid.
Did you visit the set of Burn Notice?
It could. It,
what is that?
That's Miami. It wasn't Miami. It wasn't quite Miami.
All of Florida is the same to me. It's just.
It was Jacksonville.
It's apparently not. We're going to get in trouble.
Let's go.
Any further with that. iFanboy.com is our website. It's about comic books because we like them. We read them. Every week we read a bunch of them. And then one of us picks the best one. They call that the pick of the week. We read it on the website. And we talk about it here on the podcast along with other books from the week and some other stuff. That's what we do. Before we get going, we're going to tell you what happened in these books because it's a review show and it's impossible or useless to do it otherwise. So if you haven't read your books, either run free ahead and screw it or come back later after you have. And there you go. This week, Connor still knows how to read. Sort of, although he can't seem to follow rules.
No. The Private Eye number one was the pick of the week. And if you don't know, the Private Eye number one was the bomb that was dropped on the comics industry this week when Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin announced they were doing a digital-only book. And they dropped it on the world on Tuesday. It was a pay-as-you-go book. You could pay 0 cents. You could pay 100 million cents if you wanted. You could pay whatever you wanted for it. You got a 32-page book delivered to you in a DRM-free form in various formats. And I got the PDF from them. But as I said in my review, I really didn't want this to be the pick of the week because I knew if I did pick it, there'd be some people who'd think, oh, he's just picking it because it's the thing that everyone's talking about. And so therefore, I left.
Those people don't know you me at all.
Exactly. So I left it for last because I just was avoiding it and I just didn't want to deal with it. I didn't want to love it and you know what I mean? So I didn't read it till very last. And it was a great week of books. We were talking earlier before the show, and there was a lot of great, fun books to read. And I actually had one picked out, ready to go, which we'll talk about in the next segment. As the pick of the week, I was even writing it in my head as I was reading other books. You know, I'm sure you guys know how that works. But then I read Private Eye last night. I was about halfway through it, and I was like, oh, crap. This is the pick of the week. It's not even close.
It's the book so nice we reviewed it twice.
Exactly.
I reviewed it on Tuesday, and then I was like, I'm writing it, I'm like, this review is going to be written a second time.
And I
because
just
I, could,
the
I couldn't
on
imagine.
Purpose. You know, whenever I have the pick, I don't read anybody's reviews on the website because I don't want to be tainted by it. So the Private Eye number one was the pick of the week. It was fantastic. It had nothing to do with the delivery format. Nothing to do with changing the game. It just had to do with a great story. And as we know, Brian K. Vaughan is one of the best writers in comics. We talk about him all the time. Saga's fantastic book that came out this week.
He might be the best.
Josh might consider him the best writer in comics right now.
I'm pretty close to that.
He'd be in the top five for me. I'd have to really think about it. But
I think he's top three.
You should write a review too, Josh.
Even if you look over the last like 10 years,
absolutely, he's definitely the top. Yeah.
And he's top three out of like sort of those guys. He's the one I wouldn't even question putting him there.
Yeah.
Especially when you think of original concepts.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Not just, you know, licensed stuff. I mean, like, but he's written great licensed stuff too.
And you've got Marcos Martin, who for me, I've loved since he did the Robin Year One story, the Batgirl Year One story. He's mm-hmm. a guy whose style just appeals to me. It's a little Spanish style, it's a little European style. Everyone's sort of very lithe and thin and it's just a great style. He did Daredevil. He did, you know, he did, what was the book he did that we really loved?
Spider-Man.
The issues of Spider-Man were fantastic.
He's a
great artist. Vaughn's a great writer. So here's the story. It's the story of a private eye in the future in a world where the internet at one point imploded, spilling everyone's secrets out into the world. So they're out now. There's no more internet and everyone's privacy is at a premium. It's the most important thing in the world. You can't even photograph someone without their permission, otherwise it's a crime. And then it's a PI story set in this world where, you know, there's a PI, he's got an office, a girl walks in, she's beautiful, she's got a case, the case, it gets complicated, and away we go.
And she happens to have a tiger face?
Well, that's the thing, is everyone sort of walks around wearing costumes and masks, and holographic masks, because they don't want to be seen. They want to be left alone, and mm-hmm. so you've got this world that he has envisioned. That's just fantastic. You know, there's a couple of great spreads. This is done in widescreen format to fit your tablet or a widescreen computer monitor device. A couple of great vistas of the world with the cars that aren't quite flying cars, but they hover a little bit, with the right. Everyone walking around in costumes. And this is taking place in Los Angeles, where there's a robust train system.
Those costumes must be air conditioned, or we fixed things.
Right, there's a giant dome over Southern California, and the amount of imagination that he puts into these worlds that he builds these really compelling and real feeling worlds. It feels like a place you could be, and it feels like there's a lot of detail, even though he hasn't given us much. But you fill it in yourself just through the art and through the characters. And
well, if you go for other than Saga, and it doesn't really fall into this, but if you go and you look at the other stuff that he's been really successful with, which is Why the Last Man and Ex Machina, and they're worlds that are our worlds, but they're just they're either a step beyond or you add another element, but they're all built on our world that came before them.
Which is the best way to do it, because it's relatable instantly, even if it's a little different.
And the reason that I was enjoying this book fine, and I got to the point where he goes to see his father. And I realized where we were and what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. His grandfather, actually.
Oh, sorry, grandfather. And it instantly became clear to me that what the sort of setup here and the message was. And I was like, that's amazing. That's genius. Mm-hmm. It's a backlash of social media.
Yeah, I love the grandfather. He's basically a kid today grown up. You know, he's got his broken iPhone. He's covered in tattoos.
I love it because I've looked at those guys, you know, because they're everywhere, and just thought, what are they going to be like when they're old? And it's just, it's a really fascinating extension of where we are now in a certain direction that it could go. And I was super impressed because it's kind of the opposite of what most people assume.
Right. It's this great blend of like classical, like noir detective storytelling, just a great PR story with a femme fatale, like you said. But then there's also just, it's something really prescient about it, and it's totally believable. And like you said, it's just a smidgen off from where we are today. And so it's like a Brian K. Vaughan story where it's like, it's just
he has an old mini.
Yeah.
Well, it's like next week, you know, or like in this case, it takes place in the year 2076. It's the tricentennial, and it's sort of a great choice to make it the birthday of the United States. And so it's also like looking at where we might end up, and also looking at where we've been. And you have this great character who's kind of nostalgic about the old days, and he has a lot of vinyl. And he's got these, like the Maltese Falcon poster up in his office, and hard copy books, which I'm sure everyone was reading, you know, ebooks. We haven't sort of gotten to like if ebooks are still around, because there's no internet.
They wouldn't be around. Yeah.
So I guess they wouldn't be around. So everyone's going back to reading, like, you know, he's reading the Barack Obama memoir. The Audacity of Hope is in there. And then, but then also when he's talking to his grandfather, he's like, he's a little bit mystified by you know, his grandfather's attachment to his iPhone and wanting to be able to check his updates on there. And that's something that's relatable to us. So it's kind of funny that we can see him being completely like just mystified and what, like, why was this so important to you? And why are you still clinging on to this thing that's been broken for decades, probably?
You know, it was a really interesting thing that's sort of related to that as you went through this, because this was completely independent and it wasn't associated with any publishers or companies like that. This thing is chock full of actual signage and logos of companies. And it's so strange how off-putting that is, because you're not used to seeing it.
Except for the marijuana cigarette box.
Yeah, but even that is clearly like...
Marlboro, yeah.
Yeah,
Marlboro marijuana cigarettes.
Actually, that's usually what you see.
And that's what's going to happen in 20 years. We're going to have Marlboro marijuana
cigarettes. Yeah, no, I know. But like, you see the Gap sign, it's the same. And like, even like the album covers and stuff,
the
like
Chateau
that.
Marmont,
yeah, they're real. Like, those are actual places. And like, you won't see that, or like the big MTV sign in the grandfather's house. And like, you won't see that stuff,
Kodak,
you know, in most books, because they'll change it. You know, like when you're growing up and you'd watch and they'd be drinking beer instead of Budweiser, you know.
That's a really good point.
It's just one of those things where you talk about what happens when something's not corporate as opposed to what it is, and it adds a level of, oh, this is really supposed to be our world. This is
I think
it was amazing how much it stuck out to me.
I think what it all comes down to is just this really great, not so in your face world building, where he's getting across a lot of information. Both of them are, he and the artist are getting across a lot of information about where the world has gone just through panning around his office.
Yep.
and seeing the different items that are on the desk and the different things that are important to him, the different possessions that he has, the signage, like you said. That one of the really interesting ones in the beginning is seeing the Los Angeles Times advertisement on the train. And it's, you know, it's your tax dollars at work. Mm-hmm. And the detective who's chasing him is, you know, air quotes detective, he's actually a licensed reporter. And so a lot of law enforcement is tied into reporting.
The press, yeah.
I see it like
that. The press, he says he's a member of the Fourth Estate.
But also, you can also take it out to the extension that current popular media or news will fail. And the only way to keep a newspaper going would be to publicly fund it. And mm-hmm. then that gets sticky after that. Like, you know,
it sounds like the press has subsumed law enforcement.
Well, but it's on a train. A train is another thing that was not a public service. And now, like, today, the federal government, you know, props up trains financially. So you could see that of the press, and then that gets hairy. And there's just all these little tiny things to think about.
That all goes to information being power. So, yeah, the press, who is in charge of, you know, reporting on things, they're the ones who are involved in your information and all this privacy and stuff. So
let's talk a minute about Marcos Martin, who, you know, I love the story, but for me, as much as anything, it was these widescreen sweeping panels that Marcos Martin did made the book as appealing as anything.
It was a really good example of using a traditional comic book language, but in the format of our modern devices.
It was formatted just a little differently. The panels were laid out just a little differently.
And it's been done before. It's not a new thing or anything like that. But one of the things that actually honestly scares me, and I'm very much for the future, but the traditionalist in me really likes the way that a comic book page works. And I don't like the idea of like changing how the comic book pages are, but this is a way that does it. That it's very subtle. It still uses the same mechanics, but you know, it's okay. It works like this.
I think my favorite one was I liked the fact that you sort of swiped it instead of turning the page, was when the girl showed up in the office. She was talking. There was the really close up profile picture of her
mm-hmm.
talking. And then you swiped it, and it was, you know, flopped, and it was a profile picture of him. It was a really nice, you know, way to use the technology and, you know, the page layout. You wouldn't be able to do that on a vertical page like that. It would look weird.
Yeah, and you get to do a wide vista, and it doesn't have the seam down the middle with the staples and everything. And even if you do that, you know, digitally today, like it's coming from a print format that's two pages, and sometimes it doesn't translate so well. So it just looked really natural. It was great for the chase scenes across the rooftop. Where they're not using guns, by the way, they're using like a paintball gun, because they're going to mark him. Because making someone visible, that's, you know, it's the ultimate insult in a way. It's the ultimate way of taking something from someone, because that's their privacy, that's their secrecy.
So there's just a lot going on here. It's really interesting. I hope you didn't let the format throw you off not reading it. It
reads just like a regular comic book.
It reads like a regular comic, but it's one of the most inventive and fun things I've read in a while, which is not surprising considering who it's coming from.
That first chase sequence is basically Mirror's Edge. if you've ever played that game.
With the parkour and stuff? That's
yeah, like sliding down buildings, running across. Like, it looks just like
Urban camouflage. And, yep. You know, yeah.
Now we might as well talk about Saga number 11, which is also out this week from Brian K. Vaughan, Fiona Staples. This was the classic Brian K. Vaughan switcheroo, in which the character we thought was dead is not really dead, which allows us to feel happy until another character dies that we like.
Lion Cat is okay.
Lion Cat
That's
is
all
okay.
That matters.
I didn't think he was going to be dead.
You didn't?
No. No. I don't know why.
Well, if you think about it, then yeah, probably it's... But, you know, in the moment, you're like, oh no, I love Lion Cat.
That was a great sequence. It was a silent sequence where the Will jumps out of his ship, grabs Lion Cat, uses his lance to, you know, swing back into the ship. It was a great sort of economy of storytelling.
I'm a little interested in the science behind all that. Like, you know, going into the vacuum of space. I thought about Ryan when I was reading that and wondering what he would think. So I'll have to ask him about that later.
I just read, I know I'm late, but I've been reading Super Gods. Mm-hmm. And there's this point where he says, you know, he's talking about Wortham and he says that they're worried about kids not being able to understand reality. And he just made a point. He goes, it's adults who have problems with reality. We just can't help ourselves trying to make stuff make sense when we don't have to.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Okay.
You know, I think the best thing about this continues to be the characters and the way they interact with each other. These people are on the run, and it's a story about being on the run, but they keep running into interesting people, and the family dynamics are fantastic.
It's interesting when you think about that, because when you're talking about the private eye, we don't know any of those people well enough, and so the dynamic of that was not the same thing. They're very different books. You wouldn't read them and be like, oh, it's the same guy.
Right.
And this is great in that we get all these great flashbacks to, and like lately we've been getting the flashbacks to when they first met, this couple. And I think we already liked them from the word go in the beginning. But now we're filling out more of that information and meeting their extended family as well. And it's, I think that's the biggest strength of this book, is just, you know, caring about these characters so much and being so invested in their story so they can go anywhere. And I'm along for the ride.
Because it doesn't seem to be about a story. It's not about, you know, the men dying or whatever. It seems to be so far, and I could be wrong, he could reveal it later, that it's just about these people. And of course, there'll be some sort of story they're involved in, but for the most part, so far, 11 issues in, it's, you know, I couldn't tell you a plot other than just it's hanging out with these really interesting characters.
This is like the journey part. This is, right. You know, in the Lord of the Rings when they're walking for a while.
Yeah, but at least in Lord of the Rings, you know they were walking to a mountain to do something. Whereas here,
that's true. They stopped and had lunch a lot of times, and then they sang.
Yes, they did.
That just doesn't have those things.
Right.
I might want to make that clear.
We also haven't seen the TV guy in a while, the robot.
Prince Robot the Fourth?
Prince Robot the Fourth, yeah. It's interesting, though. I don't really need it. And I haven't even thought about it until, you know, talking to you guys just now about it. But, you know, I don't need it. I just love these characters. And I love learning about them.
To me, the thing about this book is I'm a reverse priority reader. I read the thing I like the best last.
Right. Yeah, me too.
But whenever I see this book, I read this book first. Mm. I literally am like, thank God that there's this book. Right. And I read it immediately, right away.
Because it's a sure thing, you know, like I need this right now. You know, for whatever's going on in your day, I need this.
You don't understand.
Help me.
That's actually a really cool thing about the issue format, I think, is that you can actually do that. And you're only saying, well, listen, I'm taking 10 minutes. I'm reading this. I want to see it. I want to know what happens. And that's going to make everything a little bit better. It's comic book nicotine.
Now, the book that I had written the pick of the week in my head for was Justice League number 18.
Really? Okay.
Jeff Johns and Jesus Says, the fill-in artist. And this was the classic membership drive issue in which invite everybody to the satellite and watch them bounce off.
You've written that review before.
I know, and it would have been great to write it again. This was the issue where they...
Copy, paste.
Yeah, they just bounce everybody off each other, you know, people that don't normally interact. And it's just, this is the classic superhero story that I love so much. But I thought that the fill-in art, from a guy who we've loved since... I remember first sort of recognizing him in Checkmate. He's great for this book.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this art quite a bit.
It's always a pleasant surprise because sometimes I'm never expecting it when he fills in on a book, but he's fantastic. He's just a great classic superhero artist, but he's also just great with, this is a conversation issue. Mm-hmm. I didn't like the script as much. This was really about the art for me. And I find all that, like, the new characters kind of interesting. There's with the Element Woman, Element Girl, and then with Gold Rush?
Gold.
Something.
Gold Rush.
Gold Frap.
Gold Rush.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. But then when you have so many characters then they also tend to get a little one note sometimes. And I think that happened a few times in this issue. When it's like, this is the young guy. This is, you know, this is the outsider. This is...
That seems to me like that's really typical Jeff Johns structuring.
But it's also really typical team writing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's usually
it can be.
Are.
I mean, I think, you know, like your
that's
mileage
no
may vary.
I mean, that's, no different. That's no different than what he did with Justice Society, really.
I was thinking that because I was like, is this just me getting older and wanting a little bit more from stuff? Because when I came into comics, I was reading Justice Society of America, and I loved it.
It'll happen to you. And
yeah,
then
so,
people will think you don't like anything.
Right. But I don't know. I mean, I...
When you've got, you know, 15 main characters, they sort of fall into archetypes just because you don't have a lot of pages for development.
And they are narrowing the focus at the end because they do choose, you know, a core team, and then they have this new girl Adam character. So that's cool. I like the characters they chose at the end when all
was
said and done.
At the beginning, there's just way too many people to keep that.
Yeah, it's too much to latch onto, and so things get to be a little surfacey. So, but I you know, I've been away from this book for a while, for a very long while actually. I stopped during the first arc, but I think I might come back for this and see where it goes.
I also really continue to enjoy the backup, which I think once collected together will be really interesting. The Shazam story.
This is Gary Frank looking really good.
Yeah,
I was actually just
really good.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah. This is a great week of art. We'll talk about that in a couple more books.
I mean, I always like Gary Frank's art, but this is like particularly like he's on his game with this.
I think it helps. He's doing like 5 pages a month.
Right, right.
Now, probably for the first and last time. Well, definitely for the first time, but probably for the last time. Let's talk about Constantine.
I read
Josh.
It. I'm not going to lie. They sent it to me, so I wasn't going to buy it. And it's not that, and I want to make this clear, it's not that I don't think it can be good. It's not that I have anything against the creators. And it's not that I don't even hold it against DC. Like, the other book didn't sell, and they've got this property, and they need to try to do something with it. I don't think it's a good idea, and I'm not interested in reading, because it really is like, it's basically taking a thing that was all ages and buffing it up. And that's kind of what I thought, basically. The cover, which is by
Ivan Reis.
Ivan Reis.
Yeah.
He's a fine artist and he's great, but it's exactly like, it doesn't look right. Yeah. It's exactly.
Well, I think the cover was the most un-Constantine thing about it. Now I it's tough. There's two. I'm not the fan that you are, but there's two things about this I actually did like. One, I like the fact that he let his friend die.
Well, I was going to say is that that was very – I was like, okay, that was – the character was actually pretty similar.
Yeah. It's the surroundings that are the problem.
Yeah, no, as they threw away everything else that had built up around him that it made it really interesting to me. But the character, like, you know, he was thinking of himself. He let his friend die. That's pretty much spot on.
He was also an asshole in this week's Sword of Sorcery. But also,
yeah.
But
he's supposed to be.
We disagree on this, I think. I actually really quite enjoyed the art.
I don't not like the art. It's different. It's a mainstream style applied to a character who hasn't had a mainstream style artist.
But I don't even know that he's a mainstream style though. That's the thing. Like
I think in terms of the way that
he's like two degrees off the mainstream style.
Maybe,
you know what I mean?
But in terms of the line work, but in terms of like the layouts and everything, it was pretty standard to me,
and
especially
the
at the point when and the coloring has a lot to do with it. But the two page spread where Sargon the Sorceress shows up, I was like, ugh, that's just cliche number 12.
It's just like the characters are all, they're not, you know, they're all a little ugly. They're a little misshapen. Like,
he's pretty good looking.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, he's not like, but he's also not like Ivan Reis's version on the cover. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, here's nice things that I can say about it is that A, he was smoking, so that's good. B, I actually thought that Ray Fox, and who I believe did the majority of writing.
Yeah,
like,
I think Lemire just plotted it, but I'm
going to give script credit to Fox, you know, based on no reason. I thought he actually did a really good job of writing, and he might be Canadian, he might be American,
I think they're
I'm
both
not
Canadian,
sure.
I think.
Okay, well, they did a pretty good job of writing a British-sounding character. A lot of times, American guys suck at it, and I thought that it wasn't, like, amazingly authentic, but there was nothing that stood out that I was like, oh, that doesn't sound right. And I say that just from having watched a billion hours of British TV and read.
Yeah, like it didn't sound like a Monty Python skit,
right,
which is what it could sound like.
Harry Fox thought, from Toronto.
I thought it was well done, if not a little rote. It was like I felt like the heart wasn't in it. It was like, we can do the story and it's going to hit all the beats and it's going to be fine, but it didn't have anything extra.
It was very much the Hollywoodization of...
Yes.
And you know, like that joke where, you know, you'll have these, and I can't think of an example, but I know I've seen them, where you have like characters in there that are made a movie. Oh, Pee-wee Herman, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, where, you know, they make a movie out of him. He's being played, yeah. And he's being played by, was it Brolin?
James Brolin, yeah.
Right. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like, this is the movie version of Constantine. You know, it's a little cleaner, he's a little better looking, he's younger, and, you know.
I just don't know who this is for.
I have no desire to read it.
No, I don't know who it's for, because anybody who this is going to appeal to would have appealed to the other one as well. Have you guys ever read One Soul that Fox did?
No.
It's amazing. No. I'm not going to tell you that I loved it, but it was super impressive in terms of doing something I'd never read before. It was a book that came out from Oni a couple of years ago. And like, it's just one of those things, like, I've seen him put his heart into a thing and blow me away and tons of other people who read it. And then this is just like, I'm going to do this job. And he did fine with it, but there wasn't anything in it that made me like it. It's just like an impression of Constantine. It's a very good impression.
It's just the structure of it is very. It's just a very. It's a structure. New 52 book. That's it. Just feels like other New 52 books, and I can't quantify that. But you know, I have no desire to read more of it. But I agree with Connor that it was better than I thought it would be.
Like
I was expecting sort of like a Weekend at Bernie's kind of thing where it's like someone that you
awesome.
Know, but then he was just like, you know, like he's they hooked him up to, you know, batteries or something. I know that's not what happens in Weekend at Bernie's, but.
Talk about science not working, that movie. That
decays. Rigor mortis, for one thing.
Yeah. No smell.
Yeah. I don't have anything bad to say about it. I don't get it.
So first and last time, there you go. We talked about Constantine.
There you go. Yeah. So
another number one was Star Wars Legacy. And I'll be honest, I wouldn't have gotten this if not the creative team, because I'm not really interested in these future stories.
We've been a little bereft of
the Batman Beyond. You like,
no, I mean Star Wars wise.
Star Wars.
Oh, Star Wars. Okay.
No, Paul, no stories in the future I read in any genre or medium. They okay. almost take place in the present.
Or past. Okay. But even then.
All right. But so with this one, though, I think what's interesting is that and that unlike Constantine, this one very much captures the spirit of its, you know, source material, like those original movies.
Right.
And reading this, I kind of felt like I like the Brian Wood book less, like, because I see what's missing from that book that's very much present in here.
Oh, see, I like them both a lot.
I like that too, but this one feels more like it has that Star Wars magic that... I think there are like all the pieces are there in the Brian Wood one, but like that doesn't necessarily feel like Han Solo to me. Or in this one, it's got that great call to adventure. There's this sort of like serial adventure thing that was like the inspiration for Star Wars in the first place, like the very Flash Gordon-y type thing, which I got from this Jedi Knight that is going out and they're doing like this sort of like relay throughout the galaxy so that they're setting up like communications so that you can communicate between planets that are very far away from each other. And that's sort of what they're setting up here. And then the other part of the story is, and he's captured by like Sith on this other planet. And the other part of the story is Anya Solo. This is 135 years or something after the Battle of Yavin. Mm-hmm. And so it's the great, great, great granddaughter of Han Solo and Princess Leia. And she's got a debt just like, you know, Han Solo did. And she didn't
hang on to that Organa money.
Right. No. And she's working at this dump, and she discovers the lightsaber, and she's like, "This is my ticket out of here. This lightsaber and this old droid, this battered old droid," and meets up with her curmudgeonly Mon Calamari friend, who I read in the voice of Gabriel Hardman, and who is kind of like reluctantly along on the adventure. And they're trying to get off planet and get out of there and make a life for themselves. And I thought this was great. It felt like Star Wars to me, even though there's a couple things that are sort of unfamiliar since it's so far in the future.
My response to that would be that it does feel like Star Wars, but it's a lot more complicated than Star Wars. It's just like the Apes book. You know, in fact, even more like the Apes, actually, I think a little more related. It feels like it has the right feeling and all that stuff, but... It's more mature than most Star Wars, I guess, is what I would be thinking, which makes sense. The thing that I came out of this is that we've really been bereft of Gabe Hardman art.
Yep.
for a while, and I hadn't noticed. And this is just stellar. I mean, just from the ships and like the tech and everything, which is
sort of, so good with the ships. Like,
it's wonderful.
Which is sort of, it's because like I've been so used to lately seeing the sort of the Planet of the Apes stuff is very, you know, primal, and it's like horse-drawn carriages.
Exactly.
So then to leap forward and see like the hard SF kind of stuff or the space opera kind of stuff is pretty cool. So to see all the satellites and the droids and the ships, they look great.
But I mean, like, you know, I had to do some going back. Like,
yeah,
is this the same guy? Yeah. Is this way? Who's they talking about here? Like, you had to pay attention. You had to be a pretty active reader. And Star Wars is not that, unless you're talking about the first one. But there's no point in doing that.
I think that's true. There was a plot point in here where this knight is subdued by some Sith, and then one of the Sith takes his place and goes back to the Empress. And the Empire it's a very different Empire than what we know from Star Wars. And he's got white hair. And I didn't know if he was just like from his experience, this character was shocked.
Right.
And so he developed white hair like that. That weird,
I think I looked back and forth three or four times to see if they were the same face. And they were
similar enough,
I wasn't sure.
Right. And by the end, I realized, okay, it's a different person. He's taken this person's identity. So I don't know. I think that these two are great at political intrigue stories. And if you like what they were doing on Planet of the Apes, this is,
I agree,
very similar.
Guys.
Yeah?
The premiere Comic-Con in Chicago is coming.
Is it?
Yep. Do you know what it's called?
I believe it's C2E2.
Is it because it's in the script?
I would have known. Okay. I know it's not Wizard.
Well, April 26th to the 28th in 2013 in Chicago, the West Building of the McCormick Place is C2E2. And the comic book guests that will be attending include Brian Azzarello, Kieran Gillen, Rick Remender, Paul Cornell, Amanda Connor, Andy Diggle, Chris Burnham, Brian Wood, Jim McCann, John Layman, Mike Norton, Tony Moore, and tons more. If they listed them all, I would pass out. You've got the biggest artist alley of any convention, and there'll be tons of people there. Probably everybody you can think of. Go to the website and check it out. If comics guests aren't enough, C2E2 also always has a ton of stars from the entertainment world. People like Adam West, who I would actually want to meet. Brian Posehn, Julie Newmar, who I'd also want to meet as well.
Why is he in there? Brian Posehn's a strange Batman sandwich.
That's true. You think they would have put the names together. Cast of The Walking Dead will be there. Not the whole cast, but some of the cast. World famous wrestlers.
They'll be talking to each other just forever.
Diamond Dallas Page will be there, and Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake the Snake, I once touched at an event in Madison Square Garden.
That sounds.
I saw him wrestle at an event.
Yeah, we had seats next to the gate where they came out, and you know how the wrestlers come out, everybody smacks him on the arm and stuff.
I want to touch that sweaty guy.
So don't get left out. Buy your tickets in advance and save. A 3-day pass is only $55 if you pre-ordered, or $65 at the show. It saves you $10. You can get a sketch with that. So buying in advance is the best way to guarantee entry and save you some cash. Go to C2E2.com to order your tickets and get all the information, see everybody who's showing up. Remember, it's April 26th to the 28th in Chicago at the West Building in McCormick Place. See, that's C2E2, and that's coming up just in less than a month, or almost a month, depending on when you're listening to this. Or it could have been 4 years ago if you're listening to it in 2017. In which case, you missed the show. It's over.
Connor won't do futuristic things, though, so don't worry about it.
Never. Well, I will go into the past and talk about awesome dead presidents in Deadpool number 6. I'm going to get this trade when it comes out because I love the story with my whole heart.
That's very sweet. Actually, they got more presidenty in this one, I thought.
Yeah, they got way more presidenty.
They were like, let's talk about Taft. You know, let's really get in there and talk about it. Is this the end?
Yeah, this is the final issue of the arc, yeah.
Did you enjoy the end?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, it was a bit strange.
The whole thing was strange. You're talking about
it had like a Lord of the Rings like a Return of the King ending on it. And I was like, it's over. We're still going here, and then we've got this situation set up where the lady who's not Amanda Waller,
right?
I'm sorry, but I keep thinking, is that Amanda Waller? It's not. Is now in his head like Firestorm.
Right.
I don't know what I think of that.
Yeah, I'm so much concerned because I don't plan on continuing, but.
You're just in it for the president.
Yeah, basically, and Tony Moore. So
yeah, although Mike Hawthorne is coming up next.
He's great.
He really is really good.
Unless he's going to be fighting George Washington again, then
right.
What could they introduce that would keep you interested? Because like presidents, that's your thing.
Dead
you guys
vice
are
presidents.
History buffs. Dead vice presidents.
Those guys were much meaner than the presidents. So.
But they wouldn't do anything. They have no power. It's really just an empty shirt job.
I don't know. I mean, if I hear good things about it, I will certainly check it out because I did really enjoy it. Although it's, you know, I'm on the edge of Deadpool anyway.
I still don't think Deadpool's that funny.
I don't.
And I can take it. The thing is, that what I've learned is that I can't take him in small increments. But this was a lot over time, and it's not that it's bad. It's just it's a lot.
Yeah, and I was into it more of for the scenes where like the presidents were in South Central, and why are you all wearing pajamas? And they got shot.
Yeah. I do like that.
I love that you guys get into it because you're like the most unlikely Deadpool readers out there. Yeah. And well, you're reading it for not that reason. You're reading it for the like alternative history.
Yep.
They really dispatched Jefferson quite ignominiously. Just to run over by a bus.
Oh, he was a dilettante. Anyway, we could really get into that. But I got this Justice League thing is getting confusing to me. The titles are very similar.
Well, there's two words difference, but Justice League of America is the gritty government team. And I thought, Paul, that one of the complaints that you had from the first issue was alleviated in this one in that I thought this one was pretty funny.
I like this one a lot better. I still don't love the series, but I think this was a lot better than the first issue. And to have, like, this is sort of the old Geoff Johns where you've got a vibe, like, scooting away from Hawkman because he's covered in blood from a previous battle. Yeah. That was really good, Finch page. The scooting over, like, he's holding the bottom of the chair.
Yeah, that was great.
And, like, and bringing it over. I like that a lot.
Catwoman's costume is ridiculous. We understand that. I did really like the idea that she sees herself in Steve Trevor, in that she, you know, she wants Batman, he wants Wonder Woman, they can't have him. So she sees that as something they can relate to. And I really like Martian Manhunter in this. I do really, you know, I quite dug this. I really like
when she tells Vibe eyes up here and like she zipped it down like
down to her navel.
It's a little ridiculous. It's more than a little ridiculous. I kind of like the fact that she wanted to meet the president, but she's not allowed because she's a criminal.
Yeah.
And she's like, say hi for me.
I would have less of a problem with her costume if it was zipped during battle. Like,
right.
If she did that just to fuck with her teammates, you know, during the day, I could see her doing that as a character. But if
that makes sense. Martian Manhunter continues to be creepy as hell. Yeah. He messes around with people's heads.
And he's also kind of creepy in the backup tale, which
is creepy.
The debut of the Matt Kent written Scott Clark drawing Martian Manhunter backup, which I'll be interested to see where this goes.
Almost lets President Obama get assassinated, and that is President Obama. There's no mistaking it. And just to make a point. You know, so I don't know.
Again, much like Justice League, I thought this was a great team vibe in this book.
Yeah, I like Stargirl too. I like the idea that she's like a teen celebrity and she's got the braces back.
Yeah.
That was the last issue of Just Society of America that Johns wrote. Like,
she got them off, didn't she?
She got her braces off, and that was like a big milestone. So I kind of like a little tear.
What is Five Ghosts, Paul?
This was interesting. I saw people reviewing this, and I was like, that sounds like something that I would read. And plus, the artist's name is Mooneyham, Chris Mooneyham. And it was written by Frank J. Barbary. This is cool. This is, flip this open. This has like a sort of a Gene Colan on a Tomb of Dracula vibe to it. It's very like 70s Marvel. And it like and there are also some pages that look like back when Mignola was first drawing Hellboy, like the very early stuff. And I guess that was back around the time of Gotham by Gaslight 2. So it's just it's got this sort of classy kind of vibe to it, like a swinging adventure story. And the premise is that this dude Fabian Gray has a moonstone or something, or a dreamstone, and he has the powers of five literary characters, one being a wizard, which I don't know if that's supposed to be Merlin or Rasputin, an archer, so that would be like
Robin Hood,
the detective is Sherlock Holmes, there's a samurai, and then the vampire, which is so Dracula. And
are you sure it's not Edward?
He looks a little old. He's not as sparkly. Oh,
okay.
So I don't think it's Edward. But he did make the choice of a vampire over a werewolf. So and it's just kind of like, it's very old school. There are biplanes in it. And it is
sold.
It was a little confusing because they sort of throw you like right into the middle of it and they don't explain his powers. You kind of like, I kind of had to read the back cover to understand his powers. I knew that there was a vibe sort of like, what was that book where it's Cowboy Ninja Viking?
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of like that. And like, so I read the solicit
and that was the first thing I thought actually.
Right. So
Image?
This is Image. Yeah. But the Mooneyham art is, I don't know, that's why I'm sticking around, sort of.
Mooneyham is what you do when you press your ass up against the glass, right?
Yes.
The poor man. That's awful.
I'm sorry. It was there. I've been waiting for that one the whole time.
So is Wonder Woman 18 the last story of the first arc?
I don't know, but it had too many artists.
It had a lot of artists. And what we're getting here is what I have in my classic Azzarello issue.
Yeah.
Get on with it. There's a storytelling that he does that other people really like a lot. But this is a year and a half of this story, and I've totally lost track. This was my favorite book coming out of New 52. Mm-hmm. And it was gone on for such a long time that I forget who everybody is or why it matters or who they are, and I kind of don't care. And again, that becomes stunningly apparent when Cliff Chang isn't on the book. Yeah. It was a great setup, but it went on for so long. And this is, you know, this is why I stopped reading 100 Bullets, and this is why maybe if you read it all at once, it'd be fine. But boy, that they're really giving him a lot of leeway. And then at the end, there's a thing where she rips the baby. You know, the baby gets ripped out of Demeter's belly. And then it turns out that War was the one who did it. And then he's just at home at the end. And I was like, well, I don't know what happened. I don't know why it happened.
I want to read this whole thing in a row.
I don't know why Orion is there. And I hate to...
It's sort of when you get into like Greek mythology stories and stuff that involves the gods, like all the allegiances get really murky, and people can just make these flip decisions, and it's just because they're a god, they can do whatever they want. And so I think that's a little bit of what's happening here, and I'm saying that's lazy.
That's an excuse, yeah. I really get the sense that I hate to say it, but I really get the sense that somebody was like, you should put Orion in there. He was like, okay.
Well, they've been introducing the new gods, and it makes sense that the old gods would clash with the new gods.
I get it, but...
Yeah. I kind of like that as a bit of spice to it, that it was a mixture of the old and the new. And I kind of like the dynamic between Orion and Wonder Woman.
They have a great dynamic, yeah.
Yeah, that part's true, but I just, like, it doesn't... And then they're all just sitting in the apartment at the end. I was like, what the hell was that? It was a sitcom ending. It was very strange.
I'm curious to see if there's actually a new arc starting, and I'd be happy to. I looked at the last page and saw it says, next, War of the Same. And I read it as More of the Same, and I went, oh, no. we'll see. I agree with you. I'm losing my grip on it, which has happened a few times. It's brought me back each time. We'll see if it does again.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Azarello's got a thing that I really like, but he's got a style that, you know, it's tough sometimes for me. Josh, he doesn't give you a lot.
There was two things I liked about Captain America number 5 quite a bit. One, I thought, was that Romita, Palmer, and White, they were just beastly on this issue. Oh,
this was like, let me show you some Kirby style.
This was, an artistic tour de force issue. I think they've been great the whole time through, but this one is pretty
cool. I'm looking through it right now, and you need to see the smile on my face as I go through the panels. I mean, it is wonderful.
But I really liked the idea that, okay, so the whole setup of the story has been that Cap went into the Dimension Z, and he took Artem Zola's kid away and raised him as his own son. And Artem Zola's like, you took my kid. And Cap's like, you know what? You're right. I probably should have done that. And I like that. Like, Cap's like, maybe I was in the wrong here. Maybe I shouldn't have kidnapped your kid. And I like the fact that Artem Zola's pissed off. He's like, you stole my son. I mean, this isn't about superheroes or a villain. You took my kid away.
I think that happened on Angel, TV's Angel.
Could have. But I like that bit a lot.
With Pete Campbell was the kid.
Oh, Pete Campbell. I think this is great.
It's we've said it before, but every time it gets further and further away, like, oh yeah, you want to see a Captain America story? Look at this. Whoa. Like, it's so strange that I don't think anyone is talking about it. Like, I don't think people know what to make of it.
Yeah. Also, because it doesn't come out quite as much as the other books. So.
Yeah, well, this is another one, like, it's actually monthly, which is fine by me. But there's that one page where the girl gets into a fight with Cap, and she jumps up in the air as he's throwing his shield, and her legs are both out to the side. And I was like, oh, that's just straight up Kirby. It's funny because John Romita Jr. doesn't look like John Romita Sr.
No,
he looks like Kirby, and it's rad.
Yeah, his style has changed a lot since he started. So I think he's certainly found his own footing. So those are the books we want to talk about this week. Go to ifmway.com/comics. You can make your pull list. You can rate and review books. You can also make your own pick of the week. We like to run down the top 5 picks of the week as chosen by the audience. And someone dominating this list. I'm just going to get it out there now. Spoiler alert. Number 5, Action Comics 18, 2.2%. Grant Morrison's final issue. That's all I'll say about that issue. Number 4, New Avengers number 4, 2.5%. Number 3, My Little Pony micro series number 2 featuring Rainbow Dash, 3.1%. Paul, did you read that book?
It's on my stack.
Number 2, Saga 11, 31.3%. And number 1, The Private Eye number 1, 52.2% combined. Brian K. Vaughan got 83.5% of the picks of the week.
There's a real chance that My Little Pony could be a pick of the week someday.
My agent has told me not to comment about the pony book anymore because it became my thing for a while. So it's the only review people talk about.
All right, let's get to the user reviews. Stanley writes about Mystery Society Special 2013. Give the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5. Pick of the week percentage was 0. And it says, if you were a fan of the original miniseries from back in 2010, then this will be right up your alley. Steve Niles picks up right where he left off, stylistically with a breezy tongue-in-cheek look at the same characters. The story itself is a one-and-done musing, which unfortunately exacerbates the thinness of the plot, forcing the story to devote no time to building any real tension. If you didn't really care about much about the characters before, this story won't do much to fix that. It also suffers, of course, from not having Fiona Staples' artwork, though if it means keeping her on Saga, I would just as soon IDW hire a third grader to do the art for Mystery Society. He's not wrong. Though I seem to be giving it a strong thumbs up here. I like the lightness and forgettable.
Seem to not be giving it a strong thumbs up here.
Okay. I like the lightness and forgettable quality. Assuming Niles puts out any other issues, I will be sure to pick them up as well.
I agree completely with this review.
Yeah, he's 100% right. Like they got by a little bit with the, hey, here's these characters who you know at the end. And that was
let's add Frankenstein's monster and Dracula. I was like, well, let's pull back a little bit.
As much as I love the first mini, I didn't get this simply because I thought my love of the first mini was at least 50% due to the art.
I didn't remember them enough to really be able to get into it. But then again, the second half of the story was so obvious that you didn't really need to remember anything.
Yeah. It just became like a Scooby-Doo episode, quite honestly. The coloring was weird on this.
Yes, it was.
It was ugly, but like intentionally ugly. it just looked like it was produced like in the UK, like on like shot on video and in the 80s. Like that's what it looked like.
The coloring in the first one was weird too. It had a weird texture to it.
It was different though. Like this was just like the color choices. It was just very like of another time, and it just looked like an old Doctor Who episode.
I felt like they did that on purpose.
I agree. I didn't hate it. It was just like that's an odd choice.
I wish I liked it more than I did, but it was a fine musing.
I can't believe we're up to the 2013th issue, though. Bert Kreth says, of all new X-Men number 9, story 2 out of 5, art of 5 out of 5. I'm just wondering if those are rusty auto parts. Pick of the week percentage, 0.8%. I get it now. This is just going to be a slow burn for 20 issues, and then it'll be time for some X-titled event. Nothing happens again. Talk, talk, talk with some pretend fighting in between. The Emperor has nothing to say and no real tale to tell. Bored to tears and leaping off.
I enjoyed it.
I couldn't disagree more. I love
it. I've enjoyed all of them, really.
I love it.
I guess, you know what? If this was coming out at the frequency of a regular series, maybe that would bother me.
I would still love it. The characters are fantastic.
That's true. I wouldn't care. I'd be fine with it. It's getting back
to the very basics of the original characters, and that's kind of fun. It's not overcomplicated, which was the thing that I didn't like about X-Men.
They've stripped away all that, yeah.
And whether it's the main artist or whether it's the guest artist, the fill-in artist who is like better than most regular artists.
I don't think they're really calling fill-ins because they're alternating storylines.
Right.
Issues or whatever.
You know, but definitely going in, I mean, Eminem was the headliner.
Sure, absolutely.
But I think they're both just so good and just it's great acting and I like it a lot. And I like Mystique, meddling and stuff. And
I think this is a totally fun book.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah, and I like the switch of, like the real switch of that Kitty Pryde is now their superior, which is the exact opposite of what she was originally.
Yeah,
it's good. Have you said something about really liking Iceman? I was like, I do really like Iceman in this.
He's very funny.
Yeah,
you can go to fanboy.com. You can pick your pull list. You can rate and review books. And if you write a good review before Friday for a book we're not going to talk about at the beginning, you might get on the show. And now let's get the book of the month discussion in here. Before time runs out, this month's book of the month, it is March 2013.
It is the month of March.
Almost over.
Thor the Mighty Avenger Complete Collection, which is the full-size trade paperback collection of Thor the Mighty Avenger 1 through 8 and the free Comic Book Day special from 2011. I love this book. This was a book we loved when it was out in issues. We talked about it a lot. It wasn't very popular. Chris Samnee was the artist before he became a big deal on Daredevil and Captain America. Roger Langridge was the writer, Matthew Wilson's the colorist, and we loved it at the time. Not many people did. It only lasted 8 of the 12 issues it was planned to run, so that's a tragedy. We never really got the end of the story. We didn't get it here. But rereading this together all at once just made me remember how much I loved it. It's a perfect all-ages book. It's perfect. I think The tone is perfect. The characters are perfect. You can read it as single issues. You can read it as a piece. Whatever line they wrote, they found it. I mean, they found that line where it's fine for adults, it's fine for kids. You know, this is kind of written in a way that comics used to be done, where it wasn't all intricately plotted, but it also wasn't too kiddie, it wasn't too adult. It was something that you could pick up, an 8-year-old could read, and a 30-year-old could read.
Yeah, it's just the definition of a feel-good book. And what I kind of love about this is, like, it's the complete polar opposite of what Jason Aaron's doing on Thor right now.
Absolutely, yeah.
With Issa Rubik. I mean, visually, it looks nothing alike. Tonally, it's completely different. But I love both books just, like, equally, just for completely different reasons, yep. Though. I mean, at the heart of it, it's, you know, it's a great relationship book. But then, like, I don't know if people assume that it's, like, you know, what was it, Mary Jane Loves Spider-Man book or something, right. Like that, or if they think it's like an Archie book or something, where it's just all about, you know, this is a kissing book. No, it's like there's great action in this book too. And more importantly, it's really funny.
Yeah.
You don't think of Thor as being a funny book.
Well, I think
people liked about the movie.
Well, that's what it is. It wears the Marvel Studios on its sleeve, you know, the influence, mm-hmm. clearly. I mean, obviously, this book came around the same time as the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, and it plays that fish out of water bit of the movie did, where Thor is in, you know, on Earth, and he doesn't really know the customs, and he's trying to court, I was going to say Julie. I don't know who the hell Julie is.
He's Jane?
He's trying to court Jane. And he's,
don't let your girlfriend Julie listen is. To this show.
That's weird, Connor.
I have no idea who Julie is.
Yes, you do.
And, you know, the Warriors 3 show up, and Ant-Man and Wasp shows up, and Iron Man shows up, and Cap shows up, and Captain Britain shows up, and Namor shows up. And it's just so much fun. And I was thinking, I love it so much that I was looking at my shelf and thinking, if I had a fire and I could only carry 20 books out, I think this is probably one of the 20. That's how much
I love it. Yeah, I mean, the Captain Britain issue might be one of my favorite comic book issues ever. Like,
I believe that was Josh's pick of the week.
Maybe.
Yes.
I have no recollection.
I mean, it's got the Warriors 3 go with them to England, and they end up at a bar, and it's like Volstagg, like, you know, they're hiding in a closet. I'm just flipping through pages. Volstagg is stuffed inside a closet, and oh, and they got a tooth grinder and tooth gnasher.
The goats.
The goats. I love the goats. They don't use the goats enough.
And there's a little bit of back matter. It's not a ton. It's just some of the original character sketches where you can see how Samney broke down his costume and figured out the helmet. And
there's a little afterword in there that will break your heart, too, where they talk about, like, you know, how it ended abruptly. It's just a little note. This is so bittersweet, too, just knowing that it didn't get to be what they originally planned it to be. But what is there is so worth getting, and I wish that the format was a better upgrade, like a more significant upgrade over the originally. You got the single issues, where they came out with two little digests of this, which I had, and then, you know, they have this. It's not really enough to warrant a hardcover, and obviously it's a book that was canceled, so they're not going to do a hardcover. But I wish, you know, it was a little bit nicer. But you know, the colors are really great in this.
I'm surprised we have it at all. So I think it's solely due to the fact that Samney's a big deal now in Daredevil. So.
So it literally doesn't matter that language won an Eisner.
No, I take it from what I can get. You know, there you go. Thor: The Mighty Avenger, a complete collection, is March's book of the month. You can go read my review on ifanboy.com.
And if you ever hear us mention post-coital Thor, that's where it comes from. Book.
I mean, that page still
got some. That's why it was pick of the week.
Yeah. So we have time for a couple of emails. Let's get a few in here.
Ben from Erie, Pennsylvania writes in and says, I'm a big fan of team books, but I'm tired of them not lasting past one or two arcs. A new book will start and I'll get all excited, and then it seems like within a year it falls prey to some kind of event that leads to team restructuring, moving characters, you read the book for in the first place, or starting back at issue number one, or flat out cancellation. Pretty much every Marvel team book seems to have been rebooted multiple times in recent years, and the only DC team books I'm really enjoying are Justice League Dark and Earth 2. I know character relationships evolve in new characters and need to be keep introduced to keep things fresh, but the turnover rate for superhero teams lately is ridiculous. My question is, can you suggest a good team book that's been running for a while with no interruptions that I can jump into or check out in trade? You do not like the way that comic books exist right now, Ben, and I'm sorry for you.
Actually, the thing is, team books have always been that way.
Yes.
I look back in old collections and trades, and the Avengers roster changed every four or five issues. Mm-hmm. Sometimes almost completely.
Mm.
And that goes back to the Kirby and Stan Lee days. I mean, the original team lasted one issue, then they brought Captain America in issue four, and then by the end of that omnibus, they completely new team, you know, Hawkeye and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. And it's always been that way.
So maybe the question then is, what are the team books that did the most with the time that they had?
If you note the things that he's talking about, like they're off the radar books that are not interfered with in Earth 2 takes place in a different dimension, just as the Dark. Right. Honestly, nobody cares about it enough that they're going to screw with it all that much. I mean, it'll probably go away at some point.
But even they added new members.
Yeah, I know, and that's going to happen, especially at DC right now. That's par for the course right there. But if you wanted to go back and look at, you know, I would say go back and read the Justice League, Geoff Johns' Justice League or Society.
Yeah,
Justice Society. JSA and Justice Society of America.
Mm-hmm. There's a ton of stuff there. You can read that for months and be pretty good. You know, I kind of thought Next Wave, but it's kind of short. It ends kind of quickly.
Yeah.
Like those are things using sort of bigger characters that turn into, you know, that sort of stay on their own track. It's really hard.
Justice League International? I mean, the old one.
But even that constantly, I mean, that's just because that's what team books do. They cycle people in and out.
Yeah, it's kind of the point, so they can use that to showcase other characters.
What do you mean in terms of quality?
No, they're all quality, but if he wants stability, then he's, you know, that's more what I'm thinking of.
He wants Justice League, but in a Vertigo 60-issue format.
Right.
You know, in a way, I mean, and this is a stretch, but in a way, you could read something like Starman, which isn't really a team book, but there's an ensemble cast that's always there, and it's a one story sort of from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
You could check that out, maybe. It's harder with Marvel. I have a lot harder time with Marvel because their things interacting with each other is kind of the entire purpose of Marvel. And now that's also kind of the entire purpose of current DC stuff.
I would say, you know, give Young Avengers a try.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Because I think that team's probably going to stay somewhat stable. Somewhat. I have no idea. It's only been two issues, but.
But you can go back and read the original.
If you want to jump on one now that's coming out now, I'd give that one a shot. Mm-hmm. I think because there's fewer young characters to bring in.
Mm-hmm.
So if it changes, it won't be that much. So I would say if you want something that's current, you can read it monthly, then check out Young Avengers.
I don't know the all new X-Men, you know, like there are nine issues or something like that. And it's been pretty much the same story all the way through because there's other books that are doing other stuff. You can maybe read that. There's enough of them that it feels like a long run.
Runaway seems like the opposite of what you want. Because then when you get
Wolverine.
It's just that's tough. That's what team books do. They swap characters in and out. You get the interesting dynamics that way.
I'll tell you this, Ben. I hear you.
Eric writes, and he's Ghostman on the website. He says, this week saw the incredible, and he wrote obviously this last week. This week saw the incredible Batman and Robin 18 hit the shelves and caused many a comic nerd to secretly shed a tear for Damian Wayne. After reading the comments on your site and others, it is clear this issue ranked a lot of people. It's a 5-star comic all the way around. Some are even calling it the book of the year. Not sure about that. But at any rate, I noticed that it still garnered only a 4.8 rating from the fanboy community, which got me thinking, what the fuck does it take to get a perfect 5-point rating on a fanboy? Has there ever been in the history of your site a perfect 5-point rated comic?
No.
It takes one person to not vote a 5, and then you will lose that 5-point rating.
Yeah, everybody would have to think the same thing about something, and what fun is that? It would take me quitting.
The only time it's been a 5-rated book is when only one or two people have given a book a rating. Because it's a formula. All you need to do is one rating that's not a 5, and then it'll drop to 4.9.
I got to say, though, one of the really interesting things about the rating system is that if you give it a few days, the overall consensus on something is usually pretty spot on. And I really find that one person's opinion or two people's opinion doesn't do anything. But when sort of 1,000 people all vote on something,
mm-hmm.
it really levels itself out. It's kind of amazing. I always like that part.
Yeah. There's no book anywhere that everyone's going to vote as a 5-star book. Even someone will give Watchmen a 3. I know someone will give it a 1.
Oh, lots of people, yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. Because when you have a math, that's the way it's going to happen.
What about BPRD for a team book? I'm still on the last question. They change it. They shuffle the roster a little bit, but you get a lot of development
of relationships. If you went back and you got those big hardcover collections that they're doing and you read it straight through, you'd get to know all of them.
Yeah.
That would work.
Just a little off the beaten path. That's a great team book, I think.
Great comic books.
Yes.
You can write us at contact@ifanboy.com and call us at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697 to get on the show. Ask us good questions. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and let's wrap it up.
Okay. You can listen to the Make Comics podcast. There'll be a new one this Monday. That's me and Andy Schmidt of Comic Experience, former editor of Marvel and IDW. It's about how to make comics and the things involved with doing that from various places. Paul?
All right. If you liked Star Wars Legacy this week, you can go back and listen to the Talk Explode a little bit down in the feed where I spoke to Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman. I did it again. Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman. I swear to God. Okay. So I spoke to Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hardman about Star Wars Legacy and Wikipedia. And Gabriel Hardman says Wikipedia a lot. And so it's very enjoyable. Just under this in the feed should be a Booksplode about Planet Hulk with Jim and Ryan and Timmy. And we spoke about that run and why the Hulk was not involved in Marvel's Civil War event. This is what he was doing up on another planet. And if you enjoyed the Private Eye this week, I did a whole other podcast with my buddy David Ocampo over on Fuzzy Typewriter. So just go to fuzzytypewriter.com and you can listen to that.
Fast. It's impressive.
We may or may not have a show about G.I. Joe Retaliation. I don't know. It comes out next week. We did a show on the first G.I. Joe movie that Josh and Ron did that was garnered much acclaim. I just don't know. We haven't decided yet. I'm not making any promises.
Maybe it will happen, but maybe not for a little bit.
I want to do it, but I am unfortunately traveling again next week, so I don't know. I just don't know. Just get off my back.
It depends on if he loves you or not.
Right. Here's the thing, is that what we're going to do is we're going to announce the show comes out next week, and then right before, we're going to kick it back 6 months.
So there may or may not be a show about G.I. Joe Retaliation. There will be a place to talk about iFanboy.com, though.
You can check out iFanboy.com, and you can read Connor's Pick of the Week review, and you can read his Book of the Month review. And eventually be able to read my next Book of the Month review. Crap.
G.I. Joe book.
Yeah, that's true. Or all the other in-depth comic book stuff we're putting up. Different tidbits of interest and previews and some reviews and things sprinkled in. Good interview this week with Kurt Busiek on Astro City. I really enjoyed reading his answers. And all sorts of stuff like that. Go to ifmo.com/about and you can see who we is and how you can hook up with us on the internets. In different ways. I don't like the phrasing I just use on that. You can also follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy, whatever is your favorite flavor of that.
And as I mentioned literally a minute and a half ago, you can call us at 888-FANBOY 226-2697 or write us at contact@ifanboy.com to get on the show.
If you dig us, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your balls about it. God. Introduce your mom to podcast. Spread the iFanboy word.
Wow. There you go.
Did you talk to your balls, Paul?
It was in the script.
Well, there you go. That's how we're going out on this one. Yay.
Until next week, I'm Connor. Paul. I won't even be Connor next week. I'll be Connor 2 weeks. So
you will be Connor next week.
Maybe.
You just won't be here.
Are you going under assumed name?
Connor, when are you gonna show some commitment to this thing? That's what I want to know.
Connor's gonna be Dick Whitman next week.
Occasionally you have to go be Dick Whitman.
No. Didn't do it well for Dick. Anyway, I'm Josh. Goodbye. Keep it.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.